This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3131 for Monday, the 3rd of August 2020. Today's show is entitled HPR Community News for July 2020 and is part of the series HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 120 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is: warning, Ken and Dave discuss some disturbing agricultural practices. Listener discretion is advised.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Just want to tell you that this show deals with agricultural scenes that might not be that easy to listen to. Also, a lot of bad jokes. So, listener discretion is advised. Hi, everybody. My name is Ken Fallon, and you're listening to another episode of Hacker Public Radio Community News, this time for July 2020. We're recording this on Saturday at 4 o'clock on one of the most sunny days in the Netherlands, so you can expect some noise from the outside. Joining me this evening, as ever, is Mr. David Morris.
Hello, and it's not very sunny here. We had a very hot day yesterday, but it's windy, it's cooler, and it's going to rain, but it's great. I love it. I don't like the heat.
Yeah, no, the heat gets me all right, but anywho, back to glorious 15 degrees of Irish summer tomorrow, and we'll be grand. 15 degrees, let's head for the beach. Anyway, as some of you know, this is HPR Community News. What is HPR? That is a good question. Had a little bit of an existential crisis this month, and we asked on the mail list, what is HPR? And more about that anon. But this is HPR Community News, where we talk about stuff that has come across janitors' desks this month. And traditionally, we would now introduce new hosts, Dave. But sadly,
no new hosts again this month. It's a terrible thing.
It is, considering, Dave, that we have an open call for shows at the moment. We're kind of getting the summer Northern Hemisphere lull, and people are busy doing other things, so we could do with a few shows coming in. Absolutely. That would be awesome,
especially from new hosts. That would be even more welcome.
Exactly. So what we normally do is we go over the shows that were discussed, that were presented last month, to make sure that every single show has got some usually positive feedback, because I don't think there's been a show yet that I've thought, gosh, I don't find that particularly interesting. So the first one was Zen Floater 2 with Fugitia as a desktop. I thought we had another one from Zen Floater earlier, previously. He's, on this.
He was using it as a server setup, so he's now talking about it using it on his desktop.
Okay, cool. And Luna Jernberg. Sorry, everybody, I butcher people's names universally the same. So, says Firefox flat pack. Good God, Firefox flat pack. Hello. We have Firefox as both a flat pack and Snap. And that is one of the Mozillans saying that.
All right, okay.
Really key role in driving the Swedish Mozilla community forward. Very good. From DuckDuckGo.
There were comments about that in the show, so this is an answer which is great.
Excellent. Do you want to do the tattoo one in the Kiwi accent, please?
I need to refresh this. Hold on a second.
Okay, I can do it.
Yeah. No, it's okay. I open the tabs for the next month after we record the previous show, and then I forgot to refresh it. So it's sitting here with hardly anything
for a whole month.
Yeah, this is a browser I tend to use only for this.
Perfectly normal.
It's a pale moon, yeah. Anyway, you don't really want to know this, do you? Well, I don't know why I'm telling you. Klaatu says, SD card plus encrypted hard drive. I love the idea of bootable SD card reading/home from an encrypted hard drive, rendering the computer without the SD card a brick. Great model.
Nice, eh?
Yeah, cool. Yeah, it is a great model. Very good idea.
So, Tony, with his Matchbox Restoration Part 4, this one was where he was using caustic soda, and every time I think of that, I think of when we used to, you don't want to know, on the farm, what we used to use it for. Horrible, horrible, horrible stuff. Not very eco-friendly or indeed animal-friendly. Archer at 72. Says,
I'm guessing now, but I shouldn't be. Yeah, go on. Do you want to do that one?
Okay. Well, it's anybody who's a bit squeamish and turn it off now. It's there's an EU regulation that cattle cannot have horns unless they're special breeds. That's why you don't see cows with horns. So when they're young, you need to take the horns off. And later that was done with like a hot soldering iron that you basically burnt them off, but prior to that it was done by putting caustic soda on the skull, and OMG, it could go badly wrong. It was
not a lot of care to do that.
And it took like several days for it to work, and then it obviously incredibly itchy and incredibly cruel.
Yeah. I don't quite understand the. If you just cut them off, they will regrow, presumably.
Yeah, they will. Yeah,
because they grow. Yeah.
And then there's an archery, and we had a calf that bled to death as a result. Mm, oh God.
Mm, mm, mm. Did you know that if you have...
should I cut this out?
Yeah, I was just going to go off on another topic.
So go on, yeah.
I'll just shut up. No, I'll shut up.
Two versions of this.
I don't know. I find it fascinating, but although rather horrible. But I'm not sure everybody sees it that way.
I'll put the warning in at the front. Okay, Archer72 says, this is a very cool topic. I do like this topic, and I look forward to the next episode, which is good.
Yeah. I very much agree. I'm being fascinated with what Tony's doing here. It's I had not thought of using caustic soda to do this sort of stuff. Never used it much, except in chemistry lab. But yeah, very cool. Very good.
It is. I was thinking there was lots of stuff that I could use this trick on, not necessarily restoring model cars.
Mm-hmm. It certainly take paint off, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's for
and
sure.
don't these things look nice when they're polished up? That last picture he's sent. Got some great pictures.
You really do need to, if you're following along on this one, if you have the ability to go to the website and look at the pictures, you should do so. Following day was, for me, nobody cared, finding an Android phone to run Lineage OS. I hate this, in actual fact, and it's become more difficult. A lot of the apps that I've used to use, you know, be able to take off on one phone with Google services and put it onto another one, now have stopped working over the summer and require Google services to run. Why?
Yep.
Who knows?
Yep. It's surveillance capitalism, isn't it?
It's just, and some of the applications were for were for applications that particularly were angling the whole privacy aspect, and yet they're requiring these Google services. Anyway, there you go. What can you do?
I know. I was quite shocked that things are as bad as they are. Yeah. I've always semi-hated my Android phone, and I now hate it even more.
Well, I have ordered a PinePhone, so that is coming.
That'd be interesting. We'll see.
At least the pain of not knowing if the phone that you're getting is actually going to run or not is going to be less.
Yep.
At least you know that you're supporting, they support installing other operating systems and other bootloaders and stuff on that. So, but yep. If you're ever thinking about Lineage OS or something similar, have a quick listen to that show. Okay, HPR community news. Only one comment, Dave. Apparently we weren't controversial enough. Oh, CRVS. I found it surprising on relating to maths on HPR. I found it surprising that it would call it the dark side of teaching maths on HPR. Did I say that? Since I distinctly recall a community news show not so long ago, Ken himself requested someone to do a show on Fourier or was it Laplace transforms. Yes.
He's got you there.
Yes, I will use any angle to get shows on HPR. CRVS.
yes. The dark side of teaching math, I don't know. It needs to be done, I think. And familiarity with it makes it easier, I think. I'm the world's worst mathematician, but I do find myself reasonably comfortable with some of the things that I'm hearing from Andrew. Conway, for example.
My whole attitude to maths changed in the last, I think, 2 years when I heard Plateau say that maths is nothing more than a paper-based computer programming, to paraphrase him greatly. But suddenly I went, all right, that's what it is. And also that explains the fascination, that the requirement for everybody, you have to, in order to do computers, you have to be good at maths. Not necessarily.
Well, yeah, I know, as a mere biologist who didn't have anything to do with maths and stuff, I found I could program computers back in the early 70s. And the natural thing to do is to go and look at all the statistics stuff that we were being given as recipes, you know, take your numbers, add them all up, produce the mean, blah, 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 and think, oh, that's a program. I can turn that into an algo program, and did. And to get, and others were, I said, how'd you do that and stuff? But it just seemed, so I was an early waker-upper in the biology department. Now that very department is stuffed with the bioinformatics people. So
absolutely.
So,
yeah.
So I was just a fraction ahead of the curve, and I've been way, way, way behind it now.
Let me see. Finishing the frame on the long wheelbase recumbent bike, which is part of Bicycle Hacking new series, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Did we put this one up? And it's about inspired by John Culp's initial episode. And this is another one, like Tony's, where it really helps if you have a look at the photos in the show notes.
Yes.
And then you think I need to get a workmate or something similar.
Yes, that's the upmarket one. I've got the smaller one. It's in constant use. Mine is getting a bit patchy now.
Sorry, go on now.
No, I'd finished.
If somebody could do a quick episode review on workmates or similar products and what to look out for and what the best one will be, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that would be absolutely awesome.
Yeah, there's quite a range of them. The Black & Decker one, which is what this is very, very good. And this one's got a platform you can stand on.
Are you doing the show now, Dave, or are you going to submit it later?
Well, yeah. I'm off to Lidl tomorrow, where they sell interesting DIY stuff.
Cool.
To buy a pillar drill, I think. Hope.
Oh, yeah. How much?
About 70 quid.
Ooh, nice. Yeah. I'm very tempted to get one. But
they sell quickly. They tend not to have a huge stock, and they sell quickly. So you're going to try and get in there. Or my son's going to do it for me. You're going to get there early and try and grab one. It's a DIYer's machine, but boy, does it make a difference if you have one of them to drill proper holes and things.
Yeah. Absolutely. I really, when I came to this house, in the garbage, they had a one that you could mount an electric drill on, and I threw it away because there was a bit of rust on it, and I didn't really know what it was at the time, and I've been kicking myself ever since. Well, what can you do?
I do have one of those, actually, and I haven't used it. It was specifically for a Black & Decker specific size drill, but you could probably adapt it. It's just a
3D printer,
a post. Yeah. But a proper pillar drill with proper speed controls and
exactly.
It's got a laser doodad on it.
Ooh, lasers.
Crosshairs where your hole's going to get drilled. So. I don't know, I'll probably not get it after all this witter.
So the following day we had a quick look at new features coming up in the JDK 15 by Daniel Pearsons. I liked this. This was a good thing to do, actually.
Absolutely.
It's a different type of show that I enjoyed. Was good information stuff to be talking with the programmer guys, developer guys around the virtual coffee corner in the morning?
Yeah, I worked in an environment where everybody hated Java, and then a whole team came, were hired to do some particular work, and they were all Java people. So we were sort of partitioned between the Java haters, for no good reason, I think, and the ones that loved it, and I never knew quite where to stand. And so this makes me think that Java's actually something maybe I should get into. I don't know. My son's learning it.
Quite a lot everywhere.
Yeah. My son's doing it, is just in the process of finishing a project for his computer science MSc using Java. That's what they use. So he seems to be quite keen on it, actually. So
okay.
Cool. Yeah, good show. Most enjoyable.
Nice. And a nice concept if somebody wants to do something similar for Python or... insert your own favorite programming language here. Following day, we had a hookah with a review of the Akaso EK7000 Pro camera, which was quite nice. Little.
Yes, sounds good for what it is.
For the price, yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, a knockoff GoPro, I guess. And as ever, Ahuka's show notes are excellent, but didn't feel the need to put them into our show notes because it's related to a product that probably won't be available. Well, that will probably be available for the lifetime that his website is up. So, kind of weird when to put stuff in the show notes and when not to.
Mm-hmm.
So following day we had pest control. this was an interesting show by Operator about how he deals with stuff growing around, and I think Brandon Ohio summarized it perfectly. Surprise, from the title of the show coming from Operator, I thought this would be some cool way to find bugs in the code. Surprised to hear this is about real life bugs. Good luck, Operator, and I feel your pain.
Wow. Yeah, it sounded horrific.
Oh,
that was the word I use in my notes here. So many nasties, these blooming cockroaches and mosquitoes particularly, and ants.
Oh, I hate them.
Yeah. What a thing to have to deal with that lot. Wow. Well, exactly. Why on earth would you want to live there? Was pretty much my question.
Says he, stuck in the cold climes of Scotland.
Yeah. Well,
suffering the rain.
I think people that live around here are quite happy to put up with the climate that we have. In fact, I stuck my head out yesterday. My neighbours were sitting out in the garden. They're saying, "Oh, we can't stay in the house. It's too hot."
Yeah.
And it was about 26 degrees yesterday. It's not like Scotland at all. You know, I hope it goes back to cold again. So it attracts people who like cooler weather, I suspect.
Nice.
You don't have to go far from here, though, to get into the Scottish lands that are full of the midges. And the midges are deadly.
Midges. They're a version of mosquitoes, aren't they? The same family?
Well, I don't know, actually. I don't think they are.
But back in the time I did the interview, they said the midges are... Or maybe I understood it to be that they were part of the same family.
I don't know, to be honest, so I shouldn't really comment at all. But I have never, it's never occurred to me that they might be. I don't think they act as disease vectors or anything like that. But by God, they bite. And they just, the way they crawl around your eyes in their holes, biting your eyelids and the corners of your eyes and everything.
A midge is a small fly, including species of several families of the non-mosquito, Nemotiocrurian diptera group.
Diptera is just two-winged flies.
Yeah. They're found seasonally, practically every landmass, permanently arid desert, blah, blah, blah. So they're non-mosquito thingy, whatever that means. So they're not a mosquito. Okay, fair enough. Anywho, we done with that? Next one?
Yeah. I'm just scratching the midges.
I working on a farm again. People are covering their ears going, no more farm stories. But I found it best just to go out at the beginning of the summer and just get totally bitten by the feckers. And then it seemed, at least then, it wasn't as bad for the rest of the summer if you got it over in one go. Do you have things called clegs at all?
Yeah, that's a horsefly.
Yeah.
Those are vicious bugs. Oh, they really are. You definitely get feckers. Not around the sort of housing areas, but I've been wandering in the hills here, and those things just will not leave you alone. They keep coming in for the, and as soon as they land, they've got
you've got a few seconds. A half a second before they bite,
and they don't. They're not like mosquitoes. It's got a sharp proboscis thing. These things have got two abrasive pads, and they scrape at your skin to make a hole in it to get the blood. And you feel it. It's like a red-hot needle coming at you. I hate them so much. You find them in Scotland. Yeah, they're pretty common.
An operator sitting there going, "Excuse me? Do you think I live in a crop place?"
Yeah. They're not invading your house. Though there are times around where I am, very far south in Scotland, where the midges do pop up in the evenings. If you leave your doors and windows open to cool the house down, then you suddenly find, oh no, the midges are in. There's not that many of them, but that's going to change probably as climate change gets worse.
Oh God, we were depressed, and now you're making it even more depressing. Thank you, Dave. we have mosquito nets up to keep the pests out.
Yes, Scotland's can do. Not really into. I think in the midge areas, most houses have got screens on the windows, but don't do that around here. Maybe we will need to.
Okay, following day, unscripted ramblings in a walk, crisis at the manor. Dun, dun, dun. This one was an episode a year ago. Where we were talking about Liber Nil Net, which is the manor space. And it was a cool project. So, do you want to do that one?
Brian in Ohio says, "Network, I'd love to hear more about how you build out this network. It's a great show."
And Windigo says, "Co-op hosting. I also enjoy hearing more about manor.space. Very co-op style of hosting services. as discussed in episode 2411, Co-op Paradise is something that I find very encouraging.
BK says, please tell us about how you built the manor. I enjoyed your talk very much, and it's revived my project of creating this kind of resource to facilitate community with minimal dependence on the cloud. Thank you. I hope you can manage to do a follow-up talk with details for community builders that would help us do the same and build on your experience.
I may have an episode to contribute to that series if it ever comes. So, yes. Nightwise, the joy of retro computing. Nightwise talks about the old computers as an attic and how it is a lovely geek getaway. And there was one comment on that. Shall I do it?
Is it? Yeah, if you like, yeah.
Brian in Ohio says, computer learning today. I completely agree with the level of learning with computers today. So much of computer programming is opaque. Learning today seems to be, I learned I needed to do sudo in front of apt-get, pip install, blah. All computers, Slackware install disk, forth on microcontrollers is the place to go to actually learn. Thanks for the show. Good to hear the roads are bad in places other than Northwest Ohio. Now,
I think Brussels is pretty grim road-wise, isn't it, from all accounts?
Yeah. I don't know. This show, I think, had a major case of rose-tinted glasses, because I remember sitting in front of DOS computers trying to coax autoexec.bash and sysmem high and sysmem low and interrupts here because it had this network card, and then you buy a different variant of the computer. I remember wasting hours upon hours upon hours on all that sort of stuff that now just works TM.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the stuff that you learned back then, the thing about it is there is stuff that you can learn, for example, bash. Or the Linux command lines and Linux tools like LS or whatever. And in 60 years, you will still be able to use those tools. Stuff like autoexec.bash, those, himem.sys, there were just hacks that I don't think I've ever used them in another context since then. And there's quite often where recently I've been sitting at AWS at an Amazon thing where they were describing some innovative thing that they were going to develop to fix some problem. And I was thinking, that's actually frame relay is what you're talking about. Frame relay, they use that sort of algorithm when calculating how much to bill you when you were doing frame relay stuff. So okay, what goes around comes around, but a lot of this bash stuff, a lot of this old core PC stuff is unusable because it was so proprietary to that particular type of hardware.
Mine's a little bit of a blank when it comes to older computers. I did use early 6502s. I did learn to do 6502 assembler on I can't remember what it was called. It was just a CPU on a PCB with a few lights on it or something, LEDs on it or something, and you had to and switches, so you could write out your code on a bit of paper and then put it in like the old ways. I learned that, but other than that, I was a mainframe programmer, so I didn't really want. And the BBC Micro, I had one of those, but other than that, I didn't have any truck with PCs until about 2002-03, something like that. Didn't buy one myself till about 2005. So a lot of that is a closed book, and I'm not wildly interested in it, which is,
yeah,
you know, it's just a different starting point, I guess. I can see the pleasure in some of these things. Certainly, I would certainly talk about the BBC Micro with anybody who's prepared to talk about it. But these things, I don't quite see the appeal, to be honest.
Yeah, but I can get that. It's a big thing, the retro computing world.
Quite
a lot regularly on Hackaday. So don't get me wrong. I understand that I'm the exception to the rule here. Maybe
well,
my memory.
Same here. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe
here.
My memory is just too bad. And I'd love to hear more episodes about retro computing and why you're into it and why you know, keeping the history alive. Yeah, I can kind of understand that. But
it would be a terrible tragedy if these sorts of old systems completely vanished.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, from the historical side of it, I'm very enthusiastic. But I don't have any great desire to work on one myself.
I didn't find it relaxing at the time, and I definitely would not find it relaxing now. No. So, yeah. Anywho, next day. We had Linux In-Laws, Season 1, Episode 10, the Python Bumper, Part 1. And this is where the two lads were discussing, Martin was going through Python. And, well, actually, both of them were talking about why Python, basically.
Martin's learning it. That was the message I took away. Had been learning it for a few months, so he was still being convinced. I felt, but it wasn't quite clear. Martin's audio is so low, it doesn't appeal to my hearing. So I don't know what he's doing, but he tends to turn away from his mic maybe or something and get very quiet.
I'm not sure either. Really could do with the. Yeah, increasing the gain on his, if they've got two different channels. Mm-hmm. Don't know how they're recording it, but possibly recording locally and bumping up his audio, because I'm really struggling to hear what he's saying.
There's some really interesting stuff they're talking about, though.
Yeah.
When you get to hear it and try and fill in the gaps between the bits you don't hear, it sounds most interesting. So I'm enjoying the show.
And Guido, who I can only presume is Guido van Rossum, says, nice episode on a weird language. Python is ancient. Have you ever heard of Rust?
Yes. I thought Monochromic had been pushing Rust from first show. Or does he just talk about it on the second one? I'm not sure. He's a Rust fanatic, I think, isn't he?
Apparently, yes. So the following day we had Zen Floater 2 with FFS2, Pugieta encryption and UUIDs and a 9-volt battery. I talk about converting my Dell i386, blah 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 blah. And let me see, anonymous listener says security is hard. So basically this is about the Dell Mini 10, which sounds like a really nice laptop, actually. Discovered that he could boot it and, you know, various different types of data encryption. So, anonymous listener, security is hard. I think you overstated the security aspects of read-only file systems. Even if you set it to read-only at the block device level, it won't stop a rootkit or kernel exploit from writing to the drive. Some USB drives, SD cards, and occasionally hard drives claim to support device-level read-only mode, but even then, they almost all have writable firmware that could be maliciously modified by software on the host, see bad USB. The only consumer hardware I know of that supports anything close to physical write protection is CD-ROMs, and even most CD-ROM devices keep their firmware on a writable flash chip. Most of these are advanced attacks that the average person will never have to worry about, but worth keeping in mind. Read-only root file systems are mainly meant for resilience against power failures and simple unprivileged malware, but it's not meant to provide any true security against sophisticated attacks. That's why we have UEFI Secure Boot. Interesting.
Yeah. That's a viewpoint I've never encountered before. So
yeah.
very interesting. Gumnos says OpenBSD on a Mini 10. I've got OpenBSD on a Mini 10 as well. Love it. But the graphics are slow on the GMA 500 chip. No PulseSolbo driver, whatever that is. So it falls back to using Visa. Does yours have the same chipset, and did you find accelerated drivers for it, or did you just use it at the console where it's pretty snappy? I've upgraded mine to the maximum 2 gigabytes of RAM, put a newer SSD in it, and replaced the BCM wireless card, which never worked reliably, with an Atheros. But it's a wonderful little unit. Thanks for the episode.
Cool stuff. How open are role-playing games? This was something that I didn't even think I needed to worry about. But McNalu and Tattoo seem to think it's a good topic for a show. So fine. And it actually was a good topic for a show. It's very interesting. It's strange that they took this change in direction to kind of produce the open game license. But it is kind of cool. After the show, because Tlatu is a very nice person and is now running 5, I think, D&D games. So he's running a separate one for my kids and one of their friends. And my son Podrick got the full Monty manuals for his birthday last year. But his friend doesn't have anything, so this here is the, we were able to send him this document that Tlatu produced. So right. He at least has something that we can read. Mm-hmm. When I said he has sent it, it will be sent by the time you heard this, because I completely forgot to send it. But now that I've been reminded, I will send it up.
Cool. Yeah, it's... I hadn't realized there were so many levels to this, so it was quite a revelation as far as I was concerned.
Yeah. It was. It felt very much like the the free software licensing thing, that this is how they approach it. And Tlatu mentioned that drew inspiration from the GPL for how you approach it, and I think it's a fair system. Seems to have been worked out.
Yep.
Pretty cool.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
So, opposing views on tattoos. One of the few controversial shows this month. This was interesting because my wife has tattoos and I don't. It was more or less Windigo was taking my side and his wife had the same as my wife. And the funny thing is that my wife had all these tattoos prior to them being, the tattoo popularity, and is now quite annoyed that something that was unique to her has now become more popular. But she's never wanted me to get a tattoo, though.
No, I find it fascinating too because of the distinct difference between the two viewpoints, and I sympathise with Windigo more than. In fact, I made a comment to that effect. So.
I shall read Tattoo's comment, and then you can read yours, and I will comment some more. Tattoo. Team Mrs. Honeyhoom, you only get one body in life, so why not decorate it? In answer to the you only have one body in life, why put a tattoo in it? Dave Morris says,
I said, I have an aversion to tattoos. If I could have signified my surprise at being writing that sentence, I would have done, but I couldn't. Anyway, very interesting discussion, I said. It made me think a lot about the subject. When I was a kid in the 1950s, 60s, tattoos weren't cool. Society I grew up in, which was working class, Greater London and then Norfolk, was not supportive of them. They would think that people of lower class, in quotes, had, or at least that was my impression.
I try to shed as much of this type of attitude and prejudice as I can, but I still don't find myself wanting a tattoo. I have no problem with anyone else choosing to have them, though, and in some cases I admire the choices they've made. I've never voiced this opinion to my kids, as far as I know, but neither of them were keen on the idea of having tattoos when I asked. Recently, that was. The prospect of making a permanent bad decision about them, about having a tattoo, was certainly a factor in their choices. So thanks for a thought-provoking episode.
So my thoughts to the kids has been, you know, we were discussing tattoos and stuff. And the thing about it for me is that graphic design fads, fashions, change over time. You only have to look at the logos of name brands to look at their past. Like the Google logo has changed so much over time. And you have that, you can also have that with tattoos. It's very difficult for me to think of an image that doesn't personify a era. It's very difficult to put those two apart. So I said to the kids that if you are thinking of having a tattoo, I'll support you in that, and they'll even pay for it. But do out your design, and we can get it on a sock or on a temporary tattoo for a while. But put it in the drawer and leave it there for 8 years, and then come back and then see, right, is that a good, am I still happy with that? Because, you know, because then the longevity of the thing will be questioned. And I really don't have a problem with people who they have a vision for the tattoo in mind and they're putting it on, but it's the ease at which other tattoos seem to go on that I go in and I pick it from a recipe book, you know.
It's a fashion, isn't it? It's a the different designs of fashions. This is pretty much what you just said.
Yeah.
That was what my daughter said, actually. She said, I would be very, very hard. It would be very hard to make a decision based on that decision being a permanent one, you know, because if it faded after 5 years or something, then I could get another one, then I wouldn't be so bothered. But the thought that it's there for good and I may end up hating it. Because, for the same sort of reasons, the fashion would change, your viewpoint would change, you've matured, you've changed in your outlook.
Yeah,
you know, all of those sorts of things. Yeah, it's, if I were to choose a tattoo, I would go for something science-y or something, you know, like a constellation or something, a molecular structure or a COVID virus or something. But and very, very tiny. But I have no great desire.
That said, I really love some of the artwork I've seen on people with tattoos. And, you know, you've met me, Dave. I'm not exactly, I look like Mr. Conservative, especially with my bitchy rest face. And you go up to, you know, a counter and somebody serving you, and you're looking at their tattoos, and they see you looking at their tattoos, and like, all you have to do is say, "Hey, nice ink," and then boom, they start telling you about the whole story of it, and this side I'm going to do, and this side I have over here, and this is about my this is my kids, and these here, this is my wife, and this is, you know, the cool stuff. Yeah, that's a plan. You've got a plan, and you're executing it versus somebody tattooing the Chinese symbol for, you know, whatever accidentally on somebody's back.
And I've seen people who read and speak Mandarin or whatever, seeing these and saying, "Oh my goodness, do they realize that what they've written on themselves there?" Because in many cases, whoever has advised you to use that symbol has got it completely wrong.
Or so, deliberately wrong.
Yeah, or deliberately wrong, and they're having a good laugh at you for doing it. Yeah, it's not a good thing. My kids were in Japan last year, and in Tokyo, and they went to a sort of spa place, you know, with a hot onsen, hot baths and stuff. And that particular one, if you had any tattoo whatsoever, you were chucked out. You didn't get your money back either.
No,
they were very, very, very strongly against it. It's all the Yakuza stuff, I think.
Yeah, but, fascinating, that is.
Yeah, it's very different outlook.
Well, the history of that was, the if you ever, there's a YouTube channel called Jatsby, I think, stuff I found interesting. And he explained where that came from. Mm. That they, if you were a criminal, you got a tattoo, you got marked, and then they put on other tattoos to disguise these state tattoos, and then it became a tradition that the mafia classes.
Yeah. I didn't know the details of that. I knew it tended to be a yakuza, the Japanese mafia, gangsters mark. But let's research that more.
So, anyway, enough about that. I did see a tattoo recently, and I know the history of it, and it's a really cool, emotional story associated with it. But when I saw it, I was thinking, oh my God, that's a Massey Ferguson logo from the 1950s. But, and I can never unsee that again.
It's probably quite cool. I mean, certain circles.
Yeah. But that's, I said to the kids before, not about tattoos and stuff, about graphic design, that the Philips logo has to be the most classic company logo ever. It's, you know that the grid with the stars and the wombly signals?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
It's just completely timeless. You can't put an age in it. I know they tried to mess with it, but I think they've even now gone back to the original logo with the flowing symbols. Like, very... any graphic designers listening to this shouting down the microphone, please record a show. We shall do this. The next one was the one that was the new review and commentary. I just want to read what actually happened here, because there's an apologies from me to Zenfloater 2. As actually going back, looking at our website, it's not very clear about what we do and we don't do on the website. And Dave and I have taken it upon ourselves. Well, to be honest, Dave has told me off sternly, and I've gone to the corner and thought long and hard about what I should do. So it was not this. I'll read my comment before we read the other ones. So it was not Zenfloater 2's intentions to have the show notes for this episode. When I posted the show, I added the show notes and tags to this episode. So the changes that were made were tags. He sent in tags of Devuan.
Devuan, I think it is.
Devuan, correct. And he sent in show notes. With the show notes, I have no notes for this episode, unquote. So having read what he did send in, which was the title being Devuan Review and Commentary, and the summary, which was Devuan Review plus I talk about race, I assumed that was about the Debian fork, and therefore I took the first line from the Wikipedia article saying Debian is a fork of Debian, uses sys v init or openrc instead of systemd, which is a default in newer Debian releases, and the Debian development team aim to maintain compatibility with other init systems in the future and not detach Linux from other Unix systems. And we do this quite a bit, Dave. It might not be clear to people, but
Mm-hmm. We have actually said on the mailing list and stuff about, you know, how we try and tidy up notes fix the spelling mistakes and the grammar and turn plain text into Markdown and HTML and that sort of stuff. But we've never said it very explicitly. As you say, there's room for misunderstanding there.
Absolutely. To be honest, I interpreted I have no show notes. I have no notes for this review. I have no notes for this review, and you add them, because we have said countless times that if there are no show notes, we will add them by the hosts.
Mm-hmm. It says so on the site. Yeah.
Definitely. So Bitten says, politics. This show is more about American politics than Debian, to be honest. Dan says, do you want to read that?
Yeah. Dan says, purposely misleading episode. For all listeners, there's 2 minutes of discussion about Debian, remaining 32 are political commentary. I will no longer trust or listen to this contributor.
And then I posted an update to the show notes at that point, which was an edit, and I put in an edit as we do after the show. If we ever go back, we normally not always, put an edit in saying a significant portion of this show relates to the U.S. Supreme Court case of McGuirty versus Oklahoma and speculation as to possible ramifications. So the comment I put in to support that was updated show notes. We do not listen to show notes prior to posting to ensure the hosts are given freedom of speech. Shows are not moderated, with a link to that page. And we have links to, we had a discussion previously about that on the mailing list, and the end, and at that time it was about the use of offensive language in the show, which nobody had an issue with. Well, people had an issue with it, but it was because the show was not flagged as there was no warning given to the listeners about it. So at the time was, okay, where is the show? And the decision from that was the show was between the intro and the outro, essentially. The audio that you get, we don't moderate that. We do edit it. We do transcode it into primary PM. We pulse PCM, pulse to a RAW format so that we can convert it into all the other formats. So we do edit it that way. We do edit it insofar as we edit it using a script. We don't make any editorial decisions about it. And you have to be very careful with your words here, Dave. So we reduce it from stereo to mono, for example, and sometimes we might even do truncate silence on it. But the agreement in that episode, and that was from, who was it then? Mirror Shades, which was to kind of think of HPR as like a music store. So you have the parental warning thing on the label, and you've got a safe, in air quotes, cover on the outside, and then when you open up your CD, you have the more explicit graphic material. So it was a sort of gentle people agreement that we would do that. So that's kind of where we are. Thing that we didn't do, Dave, or the thing that I didn't do specifically, was update the show notes and all the frequently asked questions and stuff to reflect that. So that's just that housekeeping that we need to do.
Yeah. Need to do that for sure.
Shall
I do that one? You just did.
Please,
Your own one. Draxil says, very interesting listen. Very interesting listen. Probably more interesting than an episode about Debian, to be honest.
BEZ says, interesting but misleading title. You're entitled to your political opinions, but please title your episode appropriately. I could talk about some of the accuracy of many of your statements, but I don't believe this is the proper forum to do so. No, be easy, because the proper forum is to submit a show. Yes, indeedy.
And Co sends in the comment, misuse of HPR. HPR is an open platform, and it's very troubling to find out that it's been had. Someone felt the need to troll the platform with political statements backed by doubtful arguments wrapped in a misleading title.
And then the comment, so my apologies to Zenfloater2 there, and X said, good, very interesting things that I had no idea about.
I got trolled into listening to this name, said, title should be a short Debian review, so I'm allowed to post this here and a full episode of my opinions on race and American politics. That's what the title should be. He or she believes.
Brian in Ohio, the ruling. The Supreme Court ruling only applies to those crimes covered under the Major Crime Act. I don't think anyone is going to get out of paying taxes in Oklahoma anytime soon. Here's the link for the ruling. And again, actually, looking back at these comments, I think most people are just a little bit, the title was, title could have been better, because the topics themselves are definitely of interest to hackers. So please keep these shows coming. Yep. Following day, Archer 72, Arduino controlled Christmas lights, because it's never too early to start planning for Christmas, Dave.
This was great. I like this. He does do some really nice notes. I like the way he lays out his notes. So being a note devotee, I
do see these things. And a picture on archive.org.
Yep.
So yeah. It's
without the music. That's kind of weird. It would be nice if he said what music it was so that we could play the music and see if the lights do go in sync. So yeah.
Yeah, it's still quite an impressive thing he's done there, I think.
This is right up my alley, this sort of stuff. Love it. Okay, keep them coming. Next day, Matchbox Restoration Part 5. And this is, again, more from Tony Hughes, and you would want to have a look in the show notes. This is really coming along. Bubbling of his paint didn't work out very well.
No, that was strange, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He sprayed over it again and it was all right. It's
absolutely perfect.
Yeah, I'd have been very upset if that happened. He just kept going and it was fine.
And he was even able to clean up that yellow tint from the plastic windscreen and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And he covers it in a sort of varnish material to get a good finish on it. So fantastic. Really nice.
This is an example of something that if you told me, you know, in a pub back in the days when people went to pubs, Dave.
Granddad, I remember that.
Did you used to go to a pub, Granddad? Yeah. I used to fly in an aeroplane. No. Yeah. Anywho. 9 years' time when they've got all the vaccines and everything, we're wondering, what are you on about? We're in COVID time at the minute for historical reference. Following it. Yeah, anyway, that's one of these rebooting speech module. That's one of these shows that you don't think you're going to be interested in and then find yourself looking forward to them as they hit your feed.
Yeah. There's something about watching somebody doing a complicated and skillful thing that is always fascinating. It's a bit like standing beside a building site and watching people doing what they do. I just had the road dug up outside here. Yep. I've just installed fiber along the pavement here.
Yeah.
And I spent a goodly time yesterday when they were doing stuff, just watching what they were doing, you know.
And you're now of an age, Dave, where it's perfectly acceptable to do this.
Yeah.
Some old geezer come over.
I didn't go near them because of
poor guy, COVID. He never gets out.
I'm just looking out the window. They don't even look up. Exactly that. Again. Oh, look at that old so-and-so looking at us. He must be remembering the times when he could do things like this. Yeah. Yeah. So, no, I just find that sort of thing fascinating. I'm sure a lot of people do, too.
Yeah, I do, yeah. I must admit to nipping down and taking photos of any hole that appears in the road. I'm down there with my camera just taking pictures.
Yeah.
It amazes me, so, you know, and this is my own thoughts, blah, 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 blah. Not necessarily those of my employer or any affiliate, past or present. It amazes me, though, how chaotic the street infrastructure is. Like, you think that, all right, well, the council must have a drawing somewhere of here are all the sewage systems and here's all the telecom systems and here's all the cables. It's not. You just open up the roads and fuck everything in. Shut it back down again and hope for the best that you don't cut in down anything. It's just nuts.
I had a conversation with people from the gas, the Scottish Gas Company.
Yeah.
This maybe late last year, because the guy who was doing the foundations for my neighbour's extension had come across a gas pipe, which was not not, it was a big surprise. And I said to them, do you have a sort of master plan of where all these pipes go, you know, from the street to the house? And he said, no, I don't have any of this. Nobody has this. They don't even know where your water runs, where your sewage runs, or anything.
And it's entirely down to the guy who put it in. You know, shortest road possible. Could be going through 40 neighbors. You never know. Although now they're making more of an effort with especially with the fiber cables. They're putting trackers on them because they're not even detectable with the there's no metal in them, so they're not even detectable.
I didn't notice them doing that, but they put a piece of a strip of tape which said fiber on it, and laid that on top of it before they put the gravel on top of it.
Yeah.
I did notice that. But,
well, wrapped around the inside of the cables themselves, there's there's a little bit of ID, and they're supposed to put ID tags down every so often. But anyway.
Well, that makes sense. Though, what's going to happen when the next company wants to put fiber in? I have no idea, because it's going to happen. I think it's going to there's going to be a rush for companies to come in and put optical fiber all over the place.
I'm unable to comment due to reasons. The next week. I'm biting my lip here, Dave. Anywho, speaking of people who submit shows on topics that are of interest to hackers, is the GIMP, the canvas, the man, Ahuka, is doing to the GIMP what he did to the LibreOffice series. Speaking of which, we had somebody today who sent in a bug about the entire LibreOffice series not downloading using the link on the website, and we fixed that. So thank you very much for doing that. And yeah, we have a limited, we use the same RSS PHP script to generate the RSS for all the feeds, depending on parameters that you put in. So by default, it's only 10 days, 10 episodes long, and then if you want the full thing, you put full in. So I hadn't done that, and now the world is a better place as a result, proving things you should file bugs. And number two is that people do value the LibreOffice series. So very good.
Yeah, that was really nice to see, actually. Very good.
Andrew Conway slipping in, coming in here with his maths, trying to pollute all our brains with logic. There's formulas even, Dave. There's pictures.
Yep.
CRBS can say what he wants, but yeah. Anyway, do you want to read your one?
Oh yeah, yes, yeah. Well, Andrew said in his thing, he said the word geodesic, what a geodesic is in the context he was talking about, and he said, "Oh, I don't actually know where the word comes from, the etymology. Maybe somebody would send in a comment to do that." And of course, somebody did, and I'm afraid it was me. After I'd written that, I thought, should I really? Anyway, I did. So I said, "Hi, Andrew. Regarding geodesic, I found some answers here, and I pointed them at the site Etym Online, which is a great source for this sort of stuff. Geodesic, the word, is from geodesy, which means surveying. I think it's Greek. I didn't give every tiny detail from the site. You can go and look if you need to. Geodesy is built from, I don't know how to pronounce this, G or something, which is the same as the root of Gia and another words pertaining to the earth. Deyin, which means to divide. So it's dividing the earth. And there's, of course, that's just my limited summary. Have a look at Etym Online site for geodesy for the full description. And I say to Andrew, enjoying the series, more please.
And Sesame Mucho says, special thanks. I've enjoyed listening to your last two shows. You presented a very clear introduction to the concept. It's amazing how much an apparently small topic can unfold into something so complex and interesting. on a tangent. Ba-doom-tsh. See what he did there? She did there. It did there. I'm doing exactly this calculation for a project at work, and this episode showed me a simpler and more easily explained way to do it. There you go. Making a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. We need more, need these sorts of things.
So the following day, the 28th, we had quarter share from the audiobook club, and 5150 is still with us for this one. Enjoying these, actually, with sadness in my heart and joy at the same time.
Yes, yes, indeed, indeed. This was 2015 was what I made a note, but somebody mentioned the year they were talking about it, I think. So that's amazing.
It's a bit of a backlog.
It is, yeah.
It's excellent, yeah. Though. That's excellent. Yeah, and quarter share, I love the series. Even if 5150 did make a comment to how I viewed this was an ideal version of capitalism in these books, that nobody ever exploited their employees. So
yes, I haven't heard this one.
It's worth a listen. Yeah,
there was. Did they do another Nathan Lowell book earlier on? Because I think I listened to that. Yeah. I really enjoyed that. But
these ones are more techie. I didn't enjoy the other one as much as I enjoyed this series. So it's it's no spoilers. This guy, spacefaring guy, goes into the merchant navy and works his way up. And you start with a quarter share, then a half share, and then a full share, and blah, blah, captain share, et cetera, et cetera. So very cool. Very cool books.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely on my list now to go and read or listen to or whatever.
Yep. So the Linux Outlaws, Season 1, Episode 11, the Python Bumper Part 2. This time it's the second half. So very good. Can't argue with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we've covered a moderate number of things about this, and this is where I heard the discussion about Rust, which it's really good, really good. And they are actually looking through some of the whatever these PEPs stand for, which are their enhancement proposals or something, aren't they? Things that are going to be changed in Python in the near future. So, yeah, and another case of looking in depth at the way a language is developing, which is interesting.
Yeah. So, following show was another one from ZenFloater 2, and this time I didn't edit anything. The title is Follow-Up on HPR 3.1, 2.2 and More, Present More Undescribed. And I disliked this episode for the following reason. The link to that video that he put in, that song was in my head for ages. Ages and ages and ages, and I can't even look at it now without thinking of the same song.
Well, I know I also followed this up because I was intrigued, and this was a very popular song in my childhood. Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure what era that was from, but the way Astrid Gilberto sings it on the various YouTube versions. They have another singer here who does a wonderful job of it. And it was very odd. She seemed really awkward, whereas the thing that was released as a great hit record at the time was phrased quite a bit differently. You know, I mean, the phrasing in relation to the music. She sort of lost the beat a little bit in the YouTube thing I saw. I don't know. I think she was very, very nervous. She was sort of the only person around who could sing it, apparently.
Yeah.
She's the wife of the composer or the band leader, or I'm not sure exactly what the relationship was, but it's quite fascinating. And it's a strange song, isn't it? It is
quite appealing. It's used all over the place.
Yeah, yeah,
Did we even mention what it is? I don't think we should.
I don't think we have. No. You just have to
it wasn't in the show notes. So
take our comments and then try and extrapolate them to the actual thing.
Jan says, Zenfloater 2 asked for comments on explicit or not. Hi, Zenfloater 2. This show in question came into my podcaster showing the following title, Duvwan Review and Commentary. I got the impression the show will be about Duvwan and not knowing at the time what Duvwan might be. After listening, I asked myself why you did two topics under one headline, me not seeing the connection. I'm pretty sure the HBR folks noticed that too and might not have bothered doing a comment if each topic were put into a show of its own. Thanks for providing the content, Zenfloater 2, Jan, lacking knowledge of English. Well, that is perfect English as far as I'm concerned. But,
yes, expressed
I think,
point
yeah,
very well.
He pretty much either label it correctly or split it into two shows and don't label it, but if you don't want us to edit your show notes, then put it in the show notes. Hi, admin, janitor guys, Ken, Dave, whatever. Don't edit the show notes. Tell us. We're not psychic. And we don't listen to the shows beforehand. So that is something that we cannot, that I'm not going to deviate from for two reasons. One, HPR is a show of peers, and we all have as much right to put on a show as anybody else. And you can all say my show is good, bad, or ugly, but it's my show, so I shouldn't judge Dave's show as Dave shouldn't judge whether my show goes up. So that's that. Second thing is the weird safe harbor provision where you're protected from the content on your server so long as it's the responsibility of the other person, blah, blah, blah. You knowingly don't know that there's copyright infringement content going on there, which is actually the only reason he mentioned in that in this episode about John Culp. I don't think it was John. It was a weird Dutch guy. What's his name?
Jeroen.
Pretended to ignore us at Oldcamp. Mm-hmm. Obviously saw us. And then, yeah. I joke. He's doing okay. Obviously, he's having trouble with this, with his situation. He's cocooning at the minute. But when this is this COVID thing hopefully dies down a smidgen, we'll meet up for a few beers and something to eat, keeping distance as we will do.
That comes soon. Yes, indeed.
But in that show, the issue there was not that he had copyrighted material. Well, that was his problem, but it was that the material, he told us that there was no copyrighted material in there, so we couldn't, and I wasn't willing to take that risk but he could have done it. Somebody else wants to take over from me, that's absolutely fine too. I don't care. So do you want to do the next comment?
Yes, indeed. Brian in Ohio says, Supreme Court ruling. Quite entertaining. Is Zenfloater channeling 5150? I call it quilt logic, pieces sewn together that sometimes are beautiful and sometimes end up as pieces relegated to a bin in the attic. As far as the ruling, the Supreme Court ruling only applies to crimes covered under the Major Crimes Act, so all the other Oklahoma not existing anymore doesn't apply. Here's the link to the ruling, and he gives a link to a PDF. Read the first paragraph. Also, I'm sure people in the UK, including occupied Ireland, probably don't care about Oklahoma, the reservation or electoral college are all the real threats to their own sovereignty that exists from the German Empire. Keep the shows coming. They are, if nothing else, entertaining. P.S. Editing the show notes is not editing the content. I suspect all show notes are edited somehow to fit the formatting scheme the admins use.
He's poking a stick there.
It's a bit sharp and it's going in several directions.
I think it's a bit tongue-in-cheek there with Brian, but...
No, he's pretty much on the money as far as the editing and stuff is concerned. But we need to be a lot more explicit about what it is we do and under what circumstances and things. That will help, I think.
Occupied Ireland, do you know... What I found out recently, obviously I come from the Republic, and our history is all about the great the great battles and independence and all the rest of that that we had. And, you know, the invading, that these people were put in plantations in the north. But if you go back a few hundred years before that, or a few thousand years perhaps, then the people in Scotland, the Scots themselves, were a tribe of Irish people from Ulster who went and invaded Scotland.
Yes.
You planted people back who were here before. History is never as cut and dry as you think it is going to be.
No. The tendency to simplify it, sometimes just to make a point, is strong, but it doesn't fit with reality very well.
Well, actually, the only way I can read it is like it's propaganda by the education system in Ireland. What we learned was balanced enough, I suppose. I was reading a book on that we had to study again. It was one of the few books that survived the great fire that my father had, burning all my books from school and my notes 5 years. Not that I'm bitter, but I do. But it was pretty balanced, all in all, the history that we got. But if you were down in the pub, you got a very different version of history. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Wood-sided would be the word that I'd be looking for. Until Jack Charlton, and then everything changed.
Yeah, I'm afraid I know so little. I don't think we were given much information.
No.
And I've not gone searching for it much.
It's quite easy, you know, when essentially Ireland, we were oppressed. We kicked out the English. Aren't we great? Do you know? what are you going to do?
Yeah. Interesting stuff.
Well, actually, Irish history is quite depressing because it's we got invaded, and then things were quiet for a while, and then we got invaded again, and then things were quiet for a while, then we got invaded again. But that's actually pretty close to the history of England as well, to be brutally honest.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, but it's sold in a slightly different way, I guess, in the English case. It's edited very, very effectively.
Yes, history, interesting, fascinating topic. But it's a bit like your news. You need to be getting it from more than one source in order to get a full understanding of what actually went on.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's good to avoid a lot of modern news and find a good source if you possibly can.
More quick tips. This is operator, and I think he just records stuff, and then when he gets three or four, he puts them together and sends them in, which I'm very happy about.
Yeah, I think I quite like his approach to this, actually. Yeah,
it's completely random. Yeah, just
suddenly you go, oh, I can tell people about such and such, and bam, off he goes, and a lot of them are really, really very good.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they're like, all very good. Some of them very relevant, is what I mean. Relevant to me.
They warn about anything that's got Google, Google phone thing. What do you call it? Google. The Google, where you got a Google phone number and it's the free VoIP service. That's completely and totally American based, so of no use to anybody outside the US.
Yep.
Which is annoying in ways, some of the cool stuff that you can do with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
I'm just going to comment that the show up to movies 20 minutes late to miss out the unwanted content, shall we say? Wow, that's great. I knew this. I haven't been to the cinema now for a long time because I hate all the crap. But I used to, when the kids would ask me to go to the place, I used to go and take a book and try and sit the other way around and have headphones on, so I didn't have to listen through all the drivel that spewed in your direction before you even got to the film that you probably didn't like very much anyway. it's a hateful place. I really detest it. I don't want to go back to a cinema ever in my entire life.
I love the whole thing. I even love the ads. I just love the whole experience. Don't get to go much, but and ever since movies started being computer games on a widescreen, it just ruined it for me.
Yeah. We did have fun going to the Glasgow Science Centre when my kids were a bit younger,
yeah.
Which has got one of those 3D screen thingies. You know, the sort of great big bowl-shaped thing that you sit in front of.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
But, that's about the only thing I like now. Getting old and crotchety.
There was one comment. There are 5 comments in 3 previous shows, Dave. Would you like to deal with them, or shall I? I think there's only one that we need to cover, because the other
there
ones
is, yeah, because we covered the other ones. Oh, is it? Okay.
So, Adel P on CJDNS and Yggdrasil by...
Yggdrasil.
Yeah. I thought your views were... So, this is a comment by whom?
Sam.
Sam,
on
indeed.
And those comments on a show from 2019-03. So
that's probably why I can't remember.
March in last year. And it was Alden P. talking about CJDNS and Yggdrasil.
Okay, you do the comment then.
I'll do it.
Pronunciation, Mr. I've had higher education. Come on here.
I remember this particular version of Linux coming out, and everybody's saying, how the hell are you supposed to say that? It's the name of the tree or something that you find in Valhalla or something like that, something to do with the Norse mythology. Anyway, enough. I collect stupid facts that are no use to man or beast, and they sit in my head and push out all the useful things.
You do do a show about them, and then they're done.
They won't go away. They won't go away. Anyway, I thought your views were interesting, he says. I was particularly interested in how you highlighted that CJDNS was going to be monetized, and Yggdrasil was not, or at least yet. I've read about CJDNS, Yggdrasil, and IPFS, and I'm not sure exactly how all of these overlap. My limited understanding is CJDNS and Yggdrasil are just the network, but IPFS is the network plus a network storage system. I don't understand how IPFS network finds things or works. Sure, it uses a hash, I get that, but the mechanics of finding a hash, how it determines what pieces of multiple copies it routes back, and how, I don't get yet. It would seem to me that if we could get something like a Yggdrasil or the network that could have multiple encrypted hops like I2P or Tor, then have a store like IPFS, but you could choose what data you mirrored, like torrents or IPFS or ZeroNet, where we could really have a kick-ass open net. But anyone could publish on anonymously, and people could choose not to mirror some of the more seedy parts of the darknet. I think these are coming together. I wish it were faster.
Interesting. Good comment.
Yeah. I do vaguely remember IPFS being discussed, but I don't remember much about it.
Not familiar with ZeroNet at all. Interesting. Sam should do shows. So we covered that comment, Amazon. This is about Linux In-Laws Season 1, Episode 9, Postgres, and Bruce Momjanian, the Amazon product based on Postgres 8 is called Redshift, based on Parcel. That's interesting.
Parcel, maybe, or something like that?
Parcel.
I don't know.
Yeah, Parcel. Parcel. Yeah. Probably.
Bruce Momjan was being interviewed on that show, I think, wasn't he? He's the representative from Postgres.
Sure. Good to know. Nice for the feedback. So, mailing list discussions. Nothing controversial there at all. There was a call. Anybody wanted to join the D&D game on UTC Wednesdays? That has been, I think, that's too late now. So we had this question. I'll read out my thingy to the mailing list. Fine. Most of the shows we process require us to make some level of modifications to get them posted. This ranges from fixing tags to a complete rewrite of the show notes, or verifying whether the intros or outros were actually added or not. Each modification that we make means that it requires more human intervention and prevents us from being able to completely automate the upload process. In addition, there is a non-trivial amount of time needed to fix these issues. This can range from a few minutes to an hour or more per show. And with 260 shows a year, this mounts up. We normally don't contact hosts about these issues, as it is usually quicker to fix the issues than composing an email, waiting for the reply that may never come. For the most part, our experience has been that the hosts are more than willing to fix these issues if they are aware of them. As part of the ongoing steps towards automation, would hosts be open to the idea of getting a processing report once we have posted the show? This would list all the issues, the test tools found, and the steps that we need to take to rectify them. When did I send that out? Beginning of the month.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kind of apt, too. Given the...
Yes, yes.
...discussion that was going on. How are we going to do this? Do you want to do Andrew's? I'll do Hunky's.
Andrew says, yes, that error feedback seems like a good idea.
And then... Let me see. Honky says, if it makes your life easier, it's a brilliant idea.
And who's this? Carl D. Hammond says, I like the idea a lot. Having a list of things that didn't go smoothly means I can make targeted process improvements for the next submission.
Okay. Claudio says, I'm done with this as well. The more info, the better, and we can improve HPR as a whole. Taj says, I'm 100% for this. X110 had a scrubbed attachment, which said, I love the idea as well, doubly. So if the automated test could be well known and sled performed by the host before upload. Do you want to do a few? Okay, Daniel Pearson says, anything we can do to help the process? I'm a bit hesitant to publish when you can't change your submissions afterwards. Now, that's interesting because I've been thinking about that, about the if we publish to a... Because everything's in a database, which is a bit 1990s, to be honest. And we want to go to from a database to a flat website format, and if it's a flat website format, we can then check it into Git, but we could also check all the future episodes into Git. So therefore you could check out your episode and perhaps don't hold me to this, submit your shows that way, and then after the event you could just check out your own episode and then edit it and submit it back to us as a pull request or something. So if somebody wants to have a think about how that would actually work, that would be great.
Yep. And Norris says, if the contributor agrees, could show processing fixes be published? Could be published with the episode. It would be helpful to future hosts to see common issues.
Yep, that would be something for the FAQ, I reckon. Because then it wouldn't be linked to a particular show, so we wouldn't be...
Yeah. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
And shall I do Tony's?
Yep, far ahead.
You did too there. Hi, Ken. I don't mind at all. Anything to make life at HBR Towers easier?
Brian says, Brian in Ohio, like the idea, great learning opportunity.
And Jason Dodd says, I'm in favor of this.
And Honky's... Right. Honky says, if it makes life easier, a brilliant idea.
We did that. I was following the thread through the mailman thing. So I think that's the end, isn't it?
Yeah. Of that thread, yes.
Yes.
So I think more or less, now that we've mentioned it on this show, we'll wait for some feedback from the people who are not on the mailing list. And you should be on the mailing list if you're part of the HPR community. If you're listening to this, you should be on the mailing list. It's usually fairly low, low amount of content. The brain has just ceased to operate, but okay, fine. No difference there, I guess. So join the mailing list, but with any HPR policy decision, we need to make sure that people listening who are not on the mailing list have an opportunity to contribute. You can also send your, if you don't want to join the mailing list, which is hpr@hackerpublicradio.org, you can also send it to the janitors, who are misleadingly called admin@hackerpublicradio.org. We don't really admin anything, we just oil the cogs, I guess.
Mm-hmm. That mop and bucket gets used quite often, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Call for shows is open. As I said earlier, we could do with, if you've got shows and it's almost ready, if you could finish it off and upload it, that would be super duper. Kevin O'Brien noticed somebody out there was stealing our intellectual property, Dave. I have the lawyers on them straight away. This weird website. They didn't even make an effort to hide it. Hobby Public Radio, Dave. Like, the only difference is hobbyists instead of hackers. Dear, oh dear, oh dear. What are we going to do?
And Alistair Sinclair says, it points to the same place as the main site. I think it's just there to help people sidestep proxies and net nanny type things that look like the word hacker. And he's perfectly right.
Yes, that's why we launched it. But if anybody is forced to, and Kevin replies, let me see, what does Kevin reply? Ah, that makes sense. I guess I missed that. And Claudio and Dave says, Claudio says, that's what's behind a filter where a hacker is blocked. And then, do you want to read yours?
Yes, I said, given that we receive frequently asked questions from time to time, I've been wondering about making an FAQ page containing the frequently given answers. Smiley face. In my as yet very brief searches, I came across this mailing list thread, which may be the FGA, frequently given answer, for the Hobby Public Radio question. It points to the original discussion about this 2015.
Yeah, and we should also, in this frequently asked question, I was thinking we should merge stuff, but on the other hand, I think it would be better to have it as a kicking off place to show people where you can get the information on it, so that we're not...
Yes, I think just a sort of a map of where the stuff is. With and just maybe a brief summary of, you know... If you don't want to go further, you can just get some hints here, but if you want to get the gory details, then follow the link.
Yeah, exactly. And that linking to that two things that I could have would have been handy to have in the FAQ was the discussion about the explicit warning thing, that mail thread. That would have been handy because it's a policy decision. So we put it on the mailing list, we discuss it on community news, and then, all right, we're making this decision. Then that decision has been taken here. That one and the one about Jeroen and the copyrighted material also would be handy to have that thread there. Because it's also important that, say, this is 2015. This one about the Hobby Public Radio is a bit, non-controversial because it's just a website that we put up if somebody is blocked. If you are blocked, you should contact me so that I can contact these NetNanny people so that we can, not blaming NetNanny or anybody, but the people who are blocking the website so we can have them update our filters. It's a lot less of an issue now than it was back in 2015. But from time to time, it's been 5 years since this discussion has occurred, so it is important as well that we reevaluate ourselves in these decisions that we take and go, this was the policy back then. Is everybody still cool with this policy now? You know, that is basically why I hijacked Marcus Wilson's request, who is a new contributor and wanted to know what the line, for this reason we were only releasing material created exclusively for HPR. That would be handy to have the link on the mailing list about that. So So I'll read his comment. I have some ideas that I wanted to provide some shows. I had a question about the interpretation of produced for Hacker Public Radio for this, and he quotes, for this reason, we only releasing material created exclusively for HPR. Can I do a show for HPR and then share the show to another community online radio later? If it's CC by SA, I assume so, but I wanted to ask before I started working on my ideas. Thank you very much. So probably best to read the entire thread here. I reply, Marcus, if you create material and post it first in HPR, then it meets the requirements you mentioned. That means once you upload it to HPR server, you can publish it anywhere else you like. You can ping the janitors at admin@HPR for more technical questions as this list goes to the community. That said, these questions and three other queries I had off the mailing list does bring a fundamental question as to what HPR is. Are we a content production network like YouTube? Or are we a podcast that random people contribute to? Or to put it another way, is the host addressing the internet in general or the HPR audience? I'd like to hear your opinions of the community on this, please. To which?
So Kevin O'Brien says, that's hookah content of interest to hackers, always worked for me.
Now, Stankdog, who is one of the founders of HPR, I've always intended for this show to be by hackers for hackers, and think that most of the content should be specifically for the HPR audience of hackers. I think it is certainly fine to mix in other shows or parts of other shows that are relevant to hackers, but I would like to keep it 90% custom shows for HPR. It is a group community podcast than a platform. Definitely not a network, because that's what DPP Hack Radio was for. That network went down and we couldn't keep enough good content coming. Now we could probably do it, but going to let that rest in peace. Just my thoughts and visions from the beginning. Just some background there. Digital Dog Pound is DPP, and DPP Hack Radio was also similar to the Infonomicon hacker media thing, which is also aggregation of feeds. Next comment, Dave.
Okay. Daniel Persson says, hi people, I'm a YouTube creator and create educational content for my channel. When I feel that a subject could be explained or talked about in audio only, I repurpose that for HPR. So far, I've always re-record the audio and focus on the target audience. Doing it this way, I only have to do the research once. I'm not sure what the difference would be if I created the audio for HPR first. More than that, it would be less rehearsed, perhaps. Hope this workflow works for you.
And Brian says, Brian in Ohio, listening back to old HPR episodes, there have been many show series that have seemingly been people trying out their podcasting chops on HPR to see if hosting their own show was something they wanted to do. Talk Geek to Me and the Alien Brothers come to mind. Some are better than others. Talk to Me good, Alien Brothers not so good. But they both helped keep the lights on at HPR. So for that, I am thankful. I've never had a problem getting a slot for an episode I have produced, and I always think I'm addressing the HPR audience itself when I'm doing a show. Whatever happened to Deep Geep and Monster V? They produced some great shows. I'm a little sad that I wasn't part of HPR, but it's nice to hear what they had to say. P.S. If Monster V or DP Geek read this, you owe Ken a show.
Very good, very good. Klaatu says, there seem to be three use cases. Created content for 0, HPR and post only to HPR. 1, HPR and post first to HPR, then post elsewhere. 2, multiple targets, one of which is HPR. Based on what Stankdog has said in response to this thread, 0 and 1 are easily within the original intent of HPR. two seems to require a bunch of parameters to define. On the surface, I think it's fine, but then again, it could be abused. To better define expectations, I'd like to know what we would classify as abuse. The things that come to mind as abuse, scroll. A big corporate style podcast deciding to mirror a show on HBO just to boost their own signal. Any condition resulting in more days a week of mirrored content than the original content produced for HBR. A media blitz targets every possible outlet, including HBR, in an attempt to air content on a massive scale. The content may qualify as being of interest to hackers, but HBR is being used as a small piece in a larger campaign. Next, an AI generates unique tech content and posts it to HBR. It's valid content, but is rote and uninteresting. Next, someone seeks to silence the voices of HBR by occupying all available slots with content that appears to be of interest to hackers. Again, someone posts disinformation. As this can sometimes be up for debate, it may or may not always qualify as abuse. But ideally, the community will eventually flag repeat offences and deal with the content accordingly. So that's abuse. There's some examples of abuse. Not abuse. A content creator posts audio programming tutorials to HBR and video plus audio to YouTube, knowing that the audiences are different crowds. Next, a podcaster doesn't have money for hosting and so posts their tech podcast to HBR and points to the media in their own RSS feed. Whether or not the podcaster acknowledges HBR, the head and tail of each show identifies HBR as a significant sponsor, in quotes. Next, a big corporate style podcast decides to mirror an episode or two on HBR because they believe the content is especially relevant to our network. This is done sparingly, maybe once a month. Should they be contacted by HBR, the podcast staff responds, interacting with the HBR community on a personal level to explain why they feel HBR is an appropriate outlet for their CC BY-SA content. Next, a content creator produces content for HBR, but is uninteresting and boring to listen to. Most of our audience skips their episodes. Next, a content creator produces content for HBR, but they speak in a heavy accent, and most of our audience cannot understand what they're saying, or the audio quality is poor. So Clatter says, I don't know the best way to codify something like this. On one hand, I do think it's important to have this established officially. On the other hand, I don't think everyone submitting a show needs this level of detail.
Yes. Yeah.
Good analysis. Excellent analysis.
Yeah.
Oh, there was a signature removed as well. So.
Okay.
Good.
I'm reluctant. So he gives zero HBR post only to HBR and two multiple targets, one of which is HBR. So there's an expression in Dutch to set the ball on the ship between the ship and the pier is kind of where the sun falls down. And that is where we came up with this idea that you post to HBR first and post somewhere else later is kind of, but it's so gray the area. So that's why I wanted to take a step back and go, are we a podcast network? Is this something that we want to do? Versus are we a podcast community all feeding into this one thing, which is HBR, the podcast? And so far, it seems to be that we are not a content network. We are a HBR podcast. That said, if about the podcast don't have the money for hosting, so the tech podcast to HBR, I would much prefer that they contact us and then we'll help them do that via Internet Archive, and they have their own feeds and we get them a WordPress blog. There's plenty of ways that you can bring up a podcast absolutely on your own without having to go through HBR and all the basically restrictions that we have. Like you can't choose the time because you have to share everybody else. You know, if you're not supposed, if you're following the guidelines and the spirit of HBR, there's a lot more restrictions on you than if you just simply uploaded to Internet Archive and had your own WordPress blog on free hosting somewhere. Wouldn't you agree, Dave?
Yes, indeed. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
But this is a good summary. I will continue on then with Jason Dodd asks, just out of curiosity, what does post first mean, airs first? This would not affect me, just curious. To which I reply, once you get the second confirmation email back, then it's on the server. That's what it means. So the reason for that would be, I think it's unfair if somebody has a piece of content, like you say, they've got their own YouTube channel, but they're the meta show, and consciously they're this part of the overall show, or all of the show or some part of the show has been intended for HBR app production, then I feel it's unfair of us to have to wait, make them wait 3 months. That can occur in some cases. You know, now it's only a week because we're short of shows, but you sometimes can have to wait 3 months. So as soon as you sent it to the HBR and you got your second email back, then any delay in posting it is not your fault, so to speak. So that's what the idea behind that is.
And Jason Dodd says, got it. So it could air on another platform first, just as long as posted to HBR first. I'm amazed anyone listens to my shows and can't imagine any place wanting them, but just in case.
Yannick says, as a content maker, I always produce content for my own channel first. Typical selfish. Oh, sorry. Mute button not on. Anyway, sorry, again. As a content maker, I always produce content from my own channel first. I've never seen HBR as being an original content publisher, which explains my mistake of rebranding some of my original mistake in publishing on HBR after it was originally published on another channel, which also explains why I've been silent for a while. I will always publish on my channel first, and by doing so, I will not be able to post that content to HBR. If I ever produce content that is HBR compliant in the future, I will gladly post it then. Until then, I'm a silent lurker. Yannick, the French guy from Switzerland. And I have to admit that ever since this incident where I commented to Yannick, has this been posted somewhere else? In that case, what it turned out was it wasn't anyway, because it was a reworking of some content that he had done. So it completely was fine to publish on HBR. But I see Yannick as being, by doing what he's doing, as being a HBR community member, cemented, than he would otherwise be. However, I see loads of opportunities where there would be stuff that he could publish on HBR that wouldn't be related to the stuff that he's doing on his own channel. For example, if you look at Klaatu, I can never really figure out what, when Klaatu decides to record a podcast, whether he will put it on HBR or whether he put it on the GNU World Order, which one. I don't know how he makes that decision, but he seems to make that decision. We have also had shows in the past where the offcuts or the outtakes of the Linux Logcast, for instance, was it the Linux Logcast?
Oh, yeah.
Were posted over here. Mm-hmm. And I personally would be in favor of a collaboration with the Yannick's show, which the name of it escapes me right now.
Maker's Corner, is it?
Maker's Corner, correct.
Maker's Corner, yes.
That is exactly the sort of content that would be ideal for HBR, and I could see a situation where we would say to Yannick, we would like you to produce a series of beginner's tutorials for HBR, get a reservation from the HBR community on the mailing list, and then basically have the waiver where he, on the Maker's Corner channel, they have every week or every time they release a series on, you know, this is a basic resistor, this is a capacitor, this is what this does, and, you know, basically have a project on their, within their show that is given an exception on HBR. We could definitely propose that sort of thing to the community. I don't think anyone would have a problem with that.
Uh-huh.
But that's different than the general, my issue there would be that that would always have to go to the HBR mailing list, that we would get those sort of things approved. And this goes back to the fundamental question, are we a podcast network or are we a podcast community where we say, well, you know, in this case, I don't mind if Yannick sends that in. But in the other case, I do mind because they're relying just using us for to get publicity for this product that they're trying to sell. It's a thin line. I don't know if we can codify it, to be honest.
No, it's hard. Clatu's list of abuses and not abuses is very comprehensive, and it's a more complex issue than is immediately obvious, I think.
So, do you want to do Clatu's reply?
Clatu, yeah, sorry, I just my mind wandered there. Clatu says, this is in reply to Yannick. I don't believe you're in violation of any HBR rule, Yannick. I appreciate the content you post and your participation in the community call. Maybe you're referring to an interaction you've had privately with HBR admins. I think we as a community do need to think about what qualifies as abuse. I don't think Yannick is abusing HBR, for instance, but I do acknowledge that someone could do what Yannick is doing for a result that would look and feel like an abuse of HBR. If Yannick If Yannick didn't mirror some of his content on HBR, I wouldn't ever have heard him because I didn't know he existed till I heard him on HBR. So there's value in mirroring some content some of the time.
And that's exactly what the podcast recommendations thing is. But that is a show that, so you hear about Yannick's podcast, for instance, Dave, and you take that part, you contact Yannick and you say, well, I'd like to put this show on or whatever, or you don't even need to if it's a CC, it has to be a Creative Commons podcast. And you find some Creative Commons podcasts and you go, you write a wrapper to that and you tell the community, I'm recommending this because it's a good show and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And then you include a sample episode and you're good to go and you're golden.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think, who was it that said that, Dave, about porn? I'll know it when I see it. Abuse, I know it when I see it. I can I can smell it, Dave.
Yes. I won't ask what it smells like.
Yeah. And also, I have no problem in if we start getting spam, it's only a matter of time, actually, before we do, getting spam episodes, then we will treat that exactly the same way as we treat all the other spam that comes in.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're being inundated with spam through admin and stuff. So, yeah, and not so much on the comments. We have had bursts of
it. No, we killed that. Although there was a few weeks back, there was somebody, I don't know, was it this month or last month? Somebody was trying their best. I had to applaud them. And then I banned their IP, and that stopped them. But okay.
Yes. So, do you want to do the last one on this thread, which was Yannick?
Yeah. Yannick says, I hate you all. I'm going to go to my nuclear bunker and you can all... No, that's not actually what he said. Indeed. I don't think it was a violation. The matter is settled anyway, smiley face. I just don't want to take any chances in the future. I'm gladly post to HBR again if and when the HBR first policy gets updated. But yeah, and that's sad, really, because yeah. But how do I propose something that somebody won't take advantage of? Yeah,
I know. I quite see where Yannick's coming from, and I wasn't sure quite how to handle that myself yet.
Yeah. Tony Hughes had replied, Dear Ken, regarding the question about content, I always ask myself if it's of interest to hackers in the wider sense before submitting a show. And there are always first and foremost HBR shows. I've used items I've posted on my blog in the past to form the basis of a show, or use my show notes to create a blog post, but the audio is always for HBR. I definitely think of HBR as a podcast with the content submitted by like-minded individuals, although in some cases, as with myself, it may lead to the creation of other podcast material, not for HBR, or the confidence to join other shows.
That's Tony being a Mintcast host.
Exactly.
Which he does extremely well. Yeah.
Definitely. This has been an interesting discussion, actually, and makes me think quite a lot, because I think need to think quite fundamentally about this input from people. Yep. Truncate silence is taking out all these silences, by the way. We hope, because we edited the show.
So, yeah, it's my turn, isn't it? I've got Andrew Conway here, says, Tony expressed my views, so I won't repeat what he put so clearly. Only I'd add that after a show goes out, I look to comments and other feedback to check if it was of interest to the HBR audience. If it was, that informs me going forward.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah, but it's separate to the... Whether it's of interest to hackers or not is really irrelevant, because if you thought it was interesting enough, then surely somebody else, one other person, is going to find it interesting. So,
yeah.
Put your content on HBR. If you genuinely think it's interesting, if it's spam, then that fails that test. So we're good to go there. But this is about how do we as a community feel we're taking, you know, are we going to take the money? Are we going to diversify and use this as a podcasting network? And the reason why it's so important is the attitude that I have experienced. It's right, you know, do you watch Big Clive at all, Dave?
Yes, I do. Yes. So yes.
And he has discussed about YouTube and about the frenzy that people go into about monetizing and stuff. And he's talked about, go ahead and ad block my shows because I don't care. So I do it for fun. And I always find it funny that YouTube is there and you have content producers who are people who are using their platform, not paying any hosting, complaining that they're not getting revenue from the people who are paying for their hosting. I just find that very weird myself.
Yeah. But it has developed into that, hasn't it? That people are actually making their livings from YouTube.
They're not going down to the local... you know, the local TV station and pitching their show and going and paying them the risk that somebody is paying for this distribution. Who's paying for the ones and zeros? Yeah, who's paying for the storage? Who's paying for the replication of the data across all the servers? Who's keeping the servers on? It's Google, it's YouTube. And, you know, you could argue like that back in the 90s, you would be paying somebody to host your website and you pay for bandwidth. If I put up a video on my personal website, I pay for the bandwidth to put it there and I pay for the bandwidth of everybody who pulls it off. So why do people think that it's okay to put it on YouTube? Yeah, I suppose the argument is there that they're making revenue from your content being up there, but equally you're not paying them millions.
The whole business of the people who contribute content to YouTube making the advertising model that Google used to make money work is part of it. Yeah, I find myself a bit puzzled about where the dividing lines are between these factors and whether you have any rights. You don't have any rights at all. You're just doing it because you're the product which is being used to make money. And okay, you can make money along the way if you have enough people interested in it. But it's a very it strikes me as an extremely fragile thing to be putting your whole living on, to be expecting to be able to feed your family on the basis of.
Yeah, and fair enough. Revenue sharing and all sorts is fine, but And I bring that up because of the attitude of somebody like Big Clive is basically, I'm getting this free hosting, fine. Rather than, oh, I'm not getting the hits that I used to because somebody's changed the algorithm. Well, go get billboards and, you know, put advertisements on, buy ads.
Yeah, I
digress. I don't think this has clarified what I wanted to say.
Just show me how little I understand in absolute terms, I guess.
Well, it's basically I'd like to post a show on HPR. What do I need to do? That's fine. Versus, I've got all this stuff and I want you to put it on, and I need you to do this, and I need you to do that, and I want you to do this and the next thing. That's kind of the difference in attitude, and that's basically what it comes down to at the end of the day.
We want to avoid being used in a,
yeah,
in a way that would not be fair by absolute terms.
Yeah, that's why it's kind of important for us to decide, are we a podcast network or are we a... I know I refer to us as a podcast network, but we're probably not. It's the tech podcast, the Creative Commons tech podcast, whatever. Okay, what else, Dave?
We might as well skip over the events calendar, I guess, because there's not going to be
not a lot of point. Yeah.
A great deal on there. Tags and summaries, we've had a lot of contributions from Windigo and Daniel Person, who between them have contributed 81 updates, which is the largest
cool
we've ever managed to get. So thank you to them both for their contributions.
Lockdown kicking in there greatly for us.
That brings us down to 455, I think, needing attention. So
yeah,
it's just going from memory.
So only 455 shows have not been edited yet.
Mm-hmm. Need attention, need assistance. So yeah, so we were very happy. That was wonderful. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, that's brilliant stuff. Brilliant. Okay, tune in tomorrow. This is way too long, this show. Sorry about that, guys. Tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of Hacker
Public
Radio.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the binary revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.